It's time now for the Bob Siegel Show, a religious open forum where all questions are welcome. The Bob Siegel Show is brought to you in part by on-camera and voiceover talent RodHunter.com and the law offices of Matthew Simone. And now, here's your host, Christian apologist Bob Siegel.
And this is Bob Siegel. So, you'd like to believe in God, but you wonder, does God want to divide families? So many families are divided today over politics, over religion. Christians like to talk about unity, but didn't Jesus actually preach the opposite? Didn't he tell them to be divisive? Didn't he say, "Do not suppose that I have come to bring peace to the earth. I did not come to bring peace, but a sword. For I have come to turn a man against his father, a daughter against her mother, a daughter-in-law against her mother-in-law. A man's enemies will be the members of his own household." Well, yes, my friend, Jesus did say this, but he said many other things as well, including saying to Peter, "Put down the sword. Those who live by the sword will die by the sword," right in the middle of being arrested. Look, in context being defined as all of Jesus's teaching in the New Testament, it becomes quite clear that he was merely pointing out what will happen when his followers are faithful, taking stands for what they believe and sharing the gospel. That message of forgiveness, which people like, they like the forgiveness part, but it's also a message of repentance, which people like, well, not so much. Yes, the message is one of forgiveness from sin, but people don't like hearing about sin. In time, it became crystal clear that what Jesus meant was families of Christians would turn against them. He is not commanding Christians to turn from their families. I became a Christian in college. My father disowned me for becoming a Christian. But I got to tell you, I've also seen it work the other way. I have many dear friends whose college-age children are calling them racists simply because they accept the Bible. Even though the Bible condemned both slavery and racism ahead of its time, I've done entire programs on that subject, how the Bible gets taken out of context. Not our topic today, but you can still listen to the back shows and podcasts. They are available. Anyway, the division of families is a prediction of Jesus, a sad prediction. And while Jesus predicted this 2,000 years ago from a country across the globe, it's always especially sad to see it happening in our own country. It's sad to see it happening in America, not just regarding Christianity, but the viewpoints of other morals, other politics. This division has been going on for many, many decades as our once Judeo-Christian society began to morph into a secular humanist society. That has been so ongoing, people have unfortunately gotten used to it like comfortable old leather. But these past 2 years, humanism is fast tracking into socialism, and socialism is fast tracking into Marxism. The indoctrination is going on everywhere. It began on the college campus. Now, to be fair, it's common in any generation for college students to think they know everything. I did that when I was in college. I don't know nearly as much now as I thought I knew when I was a lot younger. So yes, some of that is just a part of life, just a part of growing up. And frankly, to any of you college students listening out there, I take less issue with you and far more issue with those who have been teaching you. It has been nothing short of brainwashing. I know you don't believe that, but that's what it's been. However, let's stop for a moment. Let's back up. Take a deep breath. I do that once in a while on this show. I really do. I take a deep breath. My friends, My dearest friends, I find it so sad that families are being driven apart, whether for religious beliefs or political beliefs. Some can't sit at the same table on Thanksgiving. Romantic relationships and marriages break up because one of them voted for Trump, or one of them didn't vote for Trump, or because one of them has a different view of the border security, or a different view of America, period. This is a tragedy. Can't people of good conscience disagree in an agreeable way? I am very strongly opinionated. I'll bet you might have noticed that by now. Yes, I am strongly opinionated. But it's not just opinion. I also share things which are not opinion. They're not opinion to me. I've done my research. I know the facts. I share the truth. The Bible, for example, the Bible is the truth. The Bible is factually accurate. Now, of course, many are listening right now and saying, I see off his rocker. The Bible, that book of fairy tales. I know. I get it. You don't agree. You don't have to. You don't have to agree. Nobody's making you. At the moment, our opinions and expressions about religion or lack thereof are protected by our First Amendment and even beyond that. Never, ever have I told somebody I cannot be their friend if they don't agree with the Bible, or I cannot be their friend if they don't agree with my political ideologies or vote for the person I voted for. And of course, never would I disown a member of my own family over it. I have a daughter and a son. They have children of their own now. Back when they were in middle school, when I finally felt they were old enough to understand why there was one set of grandparents they never saw, I made it clear that would never happen to them. It was so important. They heard what happened to me. I had to make it clear it would not happen to them. I said, I will always be your dad. I will always love you. If you ever stopped practicing Christianity, I would be very concerned. I would be very saddened. I'd probably be heartbroken, but it will never make a difference to our love. You will always be my children, no matter what you do, no matter what you say, no matter what you think. At the same time, my friends, we cannot allow the price for getting along to be the sacrifice of our convictions. I can love a person without condoning their lifestyle. I can accept a person without accepting their narrative, even if it's a popular narrative. And in that vein, I am going to call out ideas. Oh, how I'll call out ideas. Because ideas, albeit innocently held by so many, can be destructive. Returning now to what students are being taught, some students, and this was only a matter of time, right? Some students, in responding to pollsters, are starting to say we should abolish our Constitution. Why? Well, it's outdated. You're going to guess the next one. It's written by just a bunch of white men who held slaves. Now, that's not true. Once again, many of those same Constitution architects vehemently condemned slavery, but all right, however you want to slice it, here's the irony. Those who publicly claim right on television that they want to abolish the Constitution are able to do so only because they live under the First Amendment protection of our Constitution, the protection of free speech. In how many countries around the world would people be executed for saying anything critical about their country's government, anything at all? My friends, be careful what you wish for. The Marxist movement trying to overthrow our country is using the protections of the Constitution to gain complete power. If they do, God help us, but if they do, once they do, they will shred the very Constitution which they took advantage of. That will be the first thing they do. Mark my words. All right, maybe it'll be the second thing they do. They'll probably throw a big party and celebrate first. In the meantime, while it's still legal, while we still have time, I will continue to speak out with respectful dialogue and an actual conversation, but also candid outrage when challenging ideas themselves, with anger, with satire, sometimes with a little of both. And in that vein, yes, it's time now for our Joe Biden update. Here's a quotable that's been going around, Joe Biden talking. He said this in a speech. The bottom line, we're going to protect vaccinated workers from unvaccinated workers. Joe, if they're already vaccinated, then you see, Joe, the whole purpose of a vaccine is, never mind, Joe. Of course, with Joe, you never know how serious he was or how much of a gaffe he was. I know this, his handlers, those pulling his puppet strings, they're very serious. And I'll tell you who's especially serious, even though she's technically not part of the Biden administration, former head of Planned Parenthood and CNN contributor, Dr. Liana Wen. Here's what she said. Get a load of this. I think we need to make it clear that there are privileges associated with being an American. If you wish to have these privileges, you need to get vaccinated. Travel and having the right to travel interstate, it's not a constitutional right, as far as I know, to board a plane. If you want to stay unvaccinated, that's your choice. But if you want to travel, you better go get vaccinated. Well, that was fun, wasn't it? Translation. Sure, you have a choice. We're all about choice. You have a choice after we choose the choices you have. Dr. Wen, let me see, how shall I put this? The whole definition of American privilege is the privilege to live under the freedoms protected by our country's constitution. That freedom includes, by definition, genuine choice, unless we're breaking the law by robbing a bank or committing homicide. Of course, many are viewing this refusal to take the vaccine as a homicide. They're calling it a homicide because of the so-called danger it presents. A lot of people have been calling for the unvaccinated to be kept out of restaurants, kept out of cafes, concerts, music halls. Oh, wait. Sorry. Wrong list. I was reading from the wrong list. That was a list of places the Nazis would not allow the Jews to go. Easy mistake. It does look kind of familiar, doesn't it? Yes, my friends, the age-old trick to eliminate freedom through scapegoating, make it them against us, instill fear, and you can get the remainder of your numb, docile population to do anything, including, as time goes on, as we saw with the Jews, as we saw with the Germans, including murdering those scapegoats. Once the government has convinced people that you're dangerous, they can do anything. They will do everything. Turning now from the entirety of the United States to but just one of those humble states, California, home of Sacramento, and not just Sacramento, Hollywood. Hooray for Hollywood. Yes, it's time for another episode of Movies We'd Like to See with your old pal Bob. Imagination time. Imagine Arnold Schwarzenegger as Jesus. Yes, you heard me correctly. Arnold Schwarzenegger playing the part of Jesus in a movie about the second coming of Christ. Somewhere in the movie, Jesus, played by Arnold, promising to return to his disciples, says, "I'll be back." All right, I guess this election recall regarding California governors has made my mind wander a little bit. Would that the real Jesus became our governor. But hey, who needs a governor when you can have a king? Yes, now it's time for our King Newsom update. In a tweet highlighting points from his acceptance speech, King Newsom his Royal Majesty. King Newsom said, and I quote, "Tonight, California voted no on the recall and yes to science, women's rights, immigration rights, the minimum wage, the environment, our future." Well, actually, what the people voted for, and let's be clear, we still don't really know who voted for what, but assuming for a moment that the people voted to keep this guy around, the people did this, well, then what they voted for was dangerous prisoners released, homeless defecating on the streets in front of businesses, police defunded, being able to openly shoplift $999 right off of shelves and stores, the ruling tyranny of unconstitutional executive orders. Do you need a reminder? Do you need an I told you so? Newsom admitted shamelessly early on in 2020 that he was going to use the COVID crisis to enact an agenda. He did it right while he was talking to the press. And his agenda is socialist, down to the last inch, down to the last pound. We'll be bringing on Ruth Wise from Election Integrity Project in our next segment. She'll talk about how much fraud took place in last week's election. Let me briefly share my own take. When I first saw the election results, I said on my podcast that my problem was the wide margin for Newsom. Yes, of course, we are living in California. A lot of people would have voted that guy back in, believing his lies. A lot of them would. But the momentum of the recall movement, not just from Republicans, but independents, Democrats, and the many stories I was hearing election day about people showing up to vote and being told they had already voted, I came to the conclusion that at the very least, Newsom did not win by a resounding victory. It wasn't a landslide. At the very least, this had to be much closer. Yes, they obviously cheated. Maybe he still would have won, but it would have been a lot closer. However, since that time, far more information has come out. I believe this was stolen brazenly, stolen shamelessly. Why not? It worked before. Our spineless courts wouldn't even hear the cases, wouldn't even hear the lawsuits. So why wouldn't the left be emboldened to try again? This seems to be the way of the future, my friends. Elections in name only. Single party rule. Those of you who have been living here in America for many years understand full well what's at stake. Those of you who grew up under Marxist dictatorships in other countries know what you left behind, and you see it starting all over again. So what can be done? Well, here's something. Here's something to think about. Because life does have its twists and turns, and those twists, those turns are still in your memories. Memories. Let God speak to you by reflecting on what he already taught you during the bad times, what he already taught you during the good times, during the wonderful times, during all the times of your life.
Good morning, yesterday. You wake up and time has slipped away, and suddenly it's hard to find the memories you left behind. Remember, do you remember the laughter and the tears, the shadows of misty yesteryear? Good times and the bad you've seen, and all the others in between. Remember, do you remember the times of your life?
Do you remember?
Reach back for the joy and the sorrow, put them away in your mind. Spend when you get to tomorrow. passing one by one. So gather moments while you may, collect the dreams you dream today. Remember, will you remember the times of your life? Gather moments while you may, collect the dreams you dream today. Will you remember the times of your life? Of your life? Of your life?
You're listening to 1170 AM 96.1 FM, The Answer. Well, I'll bet you might have guessed who I was going to bring on tonight. You're listening to the Bob Siegel Show, and our guest, she came on to give us some cautions and some warnings a few weeks ago. Now she's going to give her assessment of what happened in last week's election. And obviously, we know that not all of the information has come in, and Ruth can't tell you everything yet because she doesn't know everything. But boy, from the little bit I've chit-chatted with her, she knows a lot. Listen and learn. Ruth Wise of Election Integrity Project, welcome back to the Bob Siegel Show.
Thank you, Bob. Good evening.
Good evening to you. Well, quite a week we've had. Well, it's probably ongoing with you.
Indeed. Still moving quite quickly.
So let me just ask the obvious. Did Newsom win with a resounding victory? Did he win at all? And again, ladies and gentlemen, she's not here to endorse a candidate. She's just here to talk about what happened. It's a nonpartisan organization.
Right. Our concern about the electoral process is the way that it's handled and whether or not opportunities for fraud and mismanagement and all that kind of stuff are there. And that's our big concern. We can't tell you definitively, you know, this is how much somebody should have won by or did won, but, you know, that's not what we do. But one would hope, and we had large numbers of observers in the field, both at voting locations, but primarily in the registrar's offices where they are processing all of these vote-by-mail ballots. And one would hope to see in an election that you could feel would be trustworthy, you would hope to see a lot of procedural, everything is being done well, it's being transparent, welcoming people to watch, explaining what's going on, and just generally see that it's all very precise and very trustworthy. And what we see in so many places in California is complete and total chaos. So when you go in there and look around, everything is chaotic, mountains of things everywhere, people not really necessarily knowing what they are doing, and a lot of efforts to block people from watching. Some counties kept observers out entirely. They even put dark paper or something over the windows and doors. So, you know, we have a constitutional right in this state to observe every aspect of the procedures for elections. And when you show up and say, okay, I'm here to watch, and they say sorry, and they lock the door against you, and they tell you lies like, well, nothing's going on, when we know there's a lot going on, that just starts to paint a picture and create a system of mistrust. And so it's no wonder then that people ask the kinds of questions that you just asked. Did he really win? Can we trust the results? We don't know, because we're not being given answers to the proper questions that we should be asking. It's very, very frustrating from county to county to see the mismanagement, the numbers of ballots that are being returned undeliverable, mountains and mountains of them.
Ruth, do we have any record, at least so far, of how many people claimed that they went down to vote and were told that they already voted? Because I heard in one county it was like 75%. Of course, that was on the first day. I don't know if it held that figure to the next day, but
yeah,
just
we
asking.
Don't have those numbers, but we have multiple places where that did indeed happen. And what we're trying to drill down now is, was it a poll worker error in which they were reading the electronic poll book incorrectly, and they really were not seeing what they thought they were seeing? Or was it accurate information given to the voter that somehow the records are screwed up? Or were these a whole lot of voters who were voted for in advance because so many duplicate ballots were sent out? We don't know the answer.
Well, I know one thing, and we have a surprise for our audience because we have an actual witness that happened to. And it turned out to be none other than my producer, Brendan Thomas. Brendan, just take about a minute. We don't want to take up too much of Ruth's time. About a minute. What happened to you when you went to vote?
So I received my mail-in ballot, as usual, in August. And immediately my first thought is, because of our last election and how many fraudulent reports were coming out, I knew for sure I wanted to go into a poll and in person and physically vote in there instead, because I know my vote would actually count in there, I felt like. So I show up there, I give my information to them, and they let me know, oh, actually, you already voted, actually. And I was shocked by that because I never turned in my mail-in ballot. My mail-in ballot was in my car the entire time, never took it out, no one opened it, nothing. And in fact, right after I finished polling, just in case, I went over to my shred machine inside my house, and I shredded the ballot just in case anything else happened there, the mail-in ballot specifically. So sure enough, so I had to fill out this form in order to say, yes, I want to re-vote again, number one. Then the next thing I know, the next morning, I'm noticing four or five different of my friends on Facebook announce that, yeah, we had to go through the same thing. We had to sign a paperwork, and it said that we even voted as well. And I even remember, too, asking them, hey, who did I vote for then, if that's the case? Oh, we're not allowed to give you that information. Yeah, it's due. And I said, well, wait, if it's my vote, I should know who I voted for, right? And they said, no, due to discrepancy and secrecy.
And no point showing your identification, because they're not even allowed to ask for identification.
Well, I think they did. And even then they said, yeah, you already voted in our information, it says. Here.
I thought, first of all, Ruth, how many times have you heard this story like Brendan's this last week? How typical is this? And can you clarify us on the election, on the law about the, I understood that we're not even allowed to ask for ID in California. Is that mistaken?
That is correct. We're not allowed to ask.
Okay.
No, we're not allowed to ask for ID. What they do have to ask you to do is to provide your name and address in order to check in the vote.
Oh, well, that'll take care of it, because nobody could write down a fake address. I've heard of elections, literally, I've heard of elections where Acorn was signing up people, and they were signing up Mickey Mouse and Donald Duck and Bart Simpson. You just can't make, isn't this just a repeat of the 2020 November, Ruth?
Well, I think there were some really new twists on this one, because what we're finding in this election is a lot of these votes that are being counted were actually sample ballots that were returned to the elections office, and by law, or by edict of the Secretary of State, they have to accept a sample ballot as a vote. So if voters somehow, threw their sample ballot away, or someone got a hold of it and someone voted their sample ballot, then that one would be taken and counted. And then when you go in with your other ballot, your real ballot in your hand, they can tell you, hey, you've already voted, and you haven't. Somebody else, voted for you. That's one of the many scenarios under which that could happen. But we had mountains and mountains and mountains of those sample ballots that came in and were being counted as regular ballots.
That is really something else. Ruth, I remember communicating with you early on this week. Over the internet, there are a lot of groups. I belong to one, Recall Gavin Newsom on Facebook, and they were talking about this special online poll. I don't remember the exact one, but there's probably a bunch where people were going to just go and take a poll online and declare who they voted for and see how many it adds up to. Now, I wanted to run that by you. You said some very interesting things to me. So to our audience, what are obviously those polls are well-intentioned, but what are the pitfalls of that?
Well, they would be very unscientific, for starters. Anybody could say anything they wanted to. And secondly, they could be invaded by a bunch of bots that you hear about all the time, where they're not real people with real votes, but they're just coming in to skew the results of that particular survey. And above all, the people who voted a certain way, if this is being conducted, for example, by the Recognition people, then the people who are going to get online and be part of that procedure would be mostly their people anyway. And so you're not really going to get any real numbers from a survey of that nature.
Ruth, tell us again what Election Integrity Project does in its makeup, and then very specifically, what is Election Integrity Project doing to get to the bottom of this last election? Obviously, not enough time has gone by, but you're in the process of getting to the bottom of things. Anything that you can tell us, I'm sure there's a lot going on behind the scenes. We understand that. What is your organization doing?
Well, we try to warn registrars and Secretary of State well in advance of election of the problems in their voter rolls, which will then cause them to mail out duplicate ballots, ballots to people who no longer hear, people who are deceased. So far, they've pretty much merely dismissed anything we send them, but it's turned out to be very accurate. And then during election time, we send armies of very well-trained observers out to see what's going on and to report back to us. And we are still collecting and analyzing. We've gotten well over 1,000 incident reports so far, and many of them are still flooding in. So there's a lot more to be addressed, and our attorneys are going to look at the situation. We're going to see if there's anything specific that needs to be addressed for this election, but much of the evidence is just simply going to be added to the evidence we've already amassed and which is being used in our current lawsuit, which people can read at our website if they want to see what our lawsuit's all about. This is an amazing lawsuit that can really make a very big difference, so we hope people will support it. And the first thing you can do is go download the complaint and read it at eip-ca.com, and I think it'll really make you excited about some of the possibilities for the future of California if we can win this lawsuit.
Wow, excited about the future of California. That seems like a pipe dream, and yet we have brave people like you standing on the edge. Again, Ruth is with a nonpartisan organization, but I will say it, King Newsom, His Royal Majesty, extended his emergency decree from COVID to say that we have to send out ballots to the home for the sake of COVID. All they have to do is say the magic word health, or we're doing this for your safety, and now they feel they can do anything. Ruth, some parting thoughts to our audience.
Parting thought, Bob, is that the legislature in California was so excited about how well it worked in 2020 to mandate that everyone be mailed a vote-by-mail ballot, and they repeated it in this election. It's now no longer about COVID. It's about great results in elections, and they have just finished passing the law that and signed it into law to make it permanent every election in the state of California.
Yeah, well, it was successful, all right. It was a clear case of cheating. And ladies and gentlemen, you need to know that at the national level, they're trying to pass this mandate that all states, including places like Texas and Florida that are doing it right, are going to have to do the mail-in ballots. And that's the least of what they're going to make them do. On the other hand, I'm not sure these tyrants feel like they even need Congress anymore. We are living under a dictatorship right now. It's a dictatorship, ladies and gentlemen. Ruth, thank you so much. Keep up the good work, and God bless you. You're a very courageous woman, and we think the world of you here on this program.
Thank you, Bob, and we'll give you more information when we get it.
I hope you can start coming on regularly, maybe every few weeks or once a month or something like that, to give us reports, because we want to stay right on top of this.
My pleasure. Thank you.
Okay, Ruth, God bless you. You're listening to The Bob Siegel Show. Thank you.
When you trust the care of your children to others, it's comforting to know they share the same Christian values, that what you teach your children at home is also taught in their preschool environment. Wisdom Works Christian Preschool is an all-inclusive preschool where the staff ministers to all children of all abilities, including children with special needs, through a curriculum developed by the owners and designed for the preschool-age child 3 to 5. During these preschool years, your children will make important developmental gains, as well as social and emotional development that'll be the foundation for their overall success in life. Wisdom Works Christian Preschool is a state-licensed, Bible-believing, Bible-teaching preschool. Contact us now at WisdomWorksChristianPreschool.com and secure a space for your preschooler. WisdomWorksChristianPreschool.com or call 619-440-1044. 619-440-1044. Wisdom Works Christian Preschool.
You're listening to The Bob Siegel Show, our theme, Christianity and its relationship to politics and pop culture. Always a pleasure to introduce the infamous, well, I would say famous, some would say infamous, mayor of El Cajon, Bill Wells. You've never met a nicer guy, but he's been pushed into a corner, and it turns out he's quite a fighter as well. Bill, what a pleasure to have you back on our program.
Hey, Bob. So that's the first time I've been called infamous. It's kind of
I was just kind of thinking of what other people would call you, but you should be famous. Dude, you're becoming a rock star. Let me tell you something, folks. He is the nicest guy. He's been on my show several times, but I know him personally as well. I know him. We've been friends for a number of years. Anyone that can't get along with Bill Wells can't get along with anybody, and yet when pushed into a corner, he will fight. He does it in a measured way, and yet lately there's been even more passion. There's stuff going on. We talked last week on our program, Bill, about this resolution that came out from San Diego County. Now, correct me if I'm mistaken, you said some things publicly or did something to push back against it, and they're punishing you in a unique way. They're not admitting that they're going after you. What on earth is going on? Everyone in San Diego County needs to hear this.
Well, they've come up with something with called the Healthy Families Initiative, which is, it sounds really nice, but what it is they're saying that any county-owned property, and we've got a lot of county-owned property because we have an airport, and way back around World War II, in order to try to bring in more jobs through a county initiative, the county was granted a lot of land around the airport. And the whole idea was that the county would then lease out this land to businesses and try to attract businesses, and all the money would go towards supporting the airport. And that's the way it's been since the 40s, and everybody was happy with that arrangement. But now the county is using that position of power by being able to control that land and saying that if you own or if you're leasing land from the county, you've got to pay quote unquote a living wage or prevailing wage. And basically what they're doing is they're dictating the businesses what they can pay their employees. So if you had a business there and you're paying your employee $15 an hour, they would say, now you have to pay your employee $45 an hour. And if that employee was working one day a week and not getting health benefits, you would say, no, you also have to provide that employee with full vacation and full health benefits. And it's what it's having the consequence of running businesses away from El Cajon. And we've already lost the Amazon distribution center. Taylor Guitars is not made an official announcement yet, but I think they'll be leaving us and going out of the country. And we also may lose up to 350 other businesses.
So this is land that, if you looked on a map, it's in El Cajon, but because of strange zonings, it technically belongs to the county. I assume, though, that the people running these businesses are probably residents of El Cajon and therefore are your constituents that you want to defend.
Right, and it is in our city. It's in the city limits. So
right, but somehow the county has this jurisdiction. How does that work exactly?
Well, like you said, a long time ago when the airport was just being established, the idea was to let the county run this program where they would try to bring in businesses into the airport area. So they were trying to make this a thriving airport. And so they granted all this land to the county, and the county was responsible for trying to encourage businesses to come out and start their businesses in the airport area.
Okay, yeah. Now I think I see. I heard what you had said there, but somehow giving the county the right to do that gave them some teeth and some jurisdiction, even though technically that's not what they're calling it.
It gave them ownership of the land, but they are now contending that because they own the land, they can dictate what the person who leases that land can pay their employees, which we think is unconstitutional, and we may be suing the county on constitutional grounds.
It just doesn't seem to set right that, okay, I understand people buy land, I own a house, I own some land, and yet here the county is buying land in El Cajon. You're the mayor of El Cajon. It seems like an end run, right?
Well, yeah. Basically, what they're doing is they're going around the concept of the minimum wage. They don't like the minimum wage. They really don't have the political clout to change the minimum wage. But what they're doing is they're saying, well, if you're going to use county-owned land, then you're going to have to pay above the minimum wage what we say you have to pay your employees. And what happened was the first casualty of this was Amazon Distribution Center. We were just in the final stages of inking the contracts with Amazon to build a new distribution center on 26 acres of county-owned land. And they were going to bring 500 jobs into the El Cajon area. And as soon as Amazon found out what the county was up to, they pulled up stakes and left. So that deal's dead. And up to 350 other businesses may also leave.
Now, we have their stated reasons for doing this. What do you think's really going on? What do you think is really motivating and propelling this thing? Oh, propelling this thing, see? And we're talking about an airport. Hey, I just thought of that, everybody. Go ahead, Bill.
Well, interestingly enough, almost all of these businesses in San Diego County are in El Cajon. Because we have an airport, the preponderance of these businesses are in the El Cajon area. Nothing even comes close to that. So we have 350 businesses that are going to be affected by this. The only thing that's close to that is Carlsbad, and they think they have 175 businesses. But after that, it's in the tens and 20s in the other cities. So basically, the county can do some virtue signaling with their base and say, look at us, we're doing this great thing for the poor, even though what they're really doing is destroying jobs for the poor. But they also get to punish the city of El Cajon, and they've got a real problem with the city of El Cajon because we pushed back pretty hard on them on some of their more radical agendas.
Okay, tell us what some of the things were that you pushed back on, because I do agree that that's what's really going on here. They are trying to use this as an excuse to come after you any way they can.
Oh, well, we've pushed back on them for housing the migrants. Certainly the COVID policy, that's been massive. I mean, when, I was the mayor that instructed the police department not to enforce COVID laws, and they just lost their minds over that and tried everything they could to coerce us into enforcing COVID laws, but we just refused to do that. And so, I think that Nathan Fletcher and Tara Lawson-Reamer, who, by the way, both of these people, I got to just be real straight. These people are not Democrats. They're communists. They absolutely want to destroy America. And I don't say that lightly. I don't say that with hyperbole. This is what I believe. I believe that they are out to destroy America in totality. And it's frightening.
It certainly is. Now, I saw a video where you were challenging Nathan Fletcher to a debate. Tell us a little bit about what you said there and exactly what points would you debate. Are you debating what his ulterior motive is? Are you debating whether this is common sense, the policy, if we let it just stand on its surface as if that's all that was going on? Tell us what was behind that challenge.
Well, I would debate just the merits of taking land and using that as a vehicle to try to manipulate what people can pay their own employees. You know, America is a free market economy system, and they are trying to circumvent the free market economy system and go to a totalitarian, communistic type system. And I'm not surprised, because Tara Loss-Reimer is a radical left-wing economist who's been very involved in ultra-left-wing politics in New York. She's from Yale. She's an attorney from New York, and she has a very, very strong, super woke, super left-wing ideas about the economy and the free markets. She's anti-capitalism. And so they are using their position as kind of supervisors to try to push forward this anti-capitalistic, anti-American agenda.
What is your opinion of this resolution that they came out with where they're going to start labeling the County of San Diego Board of Supervisors, Nathan Fletcher and others, they're going to start labeling as misinformation or dangerous speech anybody who speaks out against the vaccine? Your thoughts as the mayor of El Cajon regarding that?
You know, I mean, I've got two thoughts. One is kind of childish and stupid, because obviously we have a constitution in America that prevents that kind of thing from happening. We have the First Amendment protections. But it is frightening in the sense that they are really trying to legitimize this kind of totalitarianism. And, you know, it's the thought police. And if you don't think that's frightening, then you haven't read history, because that is how all of the totalitarian communistic regimes have, at least at one point in time, tried to control their populace. If you can control thought, you can control what people say, then you are very, very close to being able to control people's lives in totality.
And isn't it true that the more you can scare people, the more you can get them to cooperate? Because I heard Nathan Fletcher's speech. This is not his own speech after the meeting was about speech. He said, this is not going to come down against freedom of speech. Everybody relax. And yet they're labeling certain kinds of speech dangerous. How hard would it be to then have a state executive order or some law go on the ballot that wants to make dangerous speech against the law? I understand that we have a constitution which says you can't do that, but I don't think these people know the difference between the constitution or a box of Kleenex, or more correctly put, in some of their cases, they're very aware of the constitution. They use and exploit the constitution to get their way. And if they came into power, wouldn't shredding the constitution be the first thing they would do anyway?
Well, it seems to me, yeah, absolutely. That's like you said, they use the Constitution when it's convenient for them to try to protect their radical left-wing ideas. And they say, well, the Constitution protects our ideas. But as soon as they possibly can, they'll take away your rights of free speech, your rights to possess firearms, your rights of movement. You know, you look at what's happening in Australia right now, and all these things are happening. They don't have their guns. They can't move around freely. They're being constantly monitored by facial recognition and by their the software on their phone.
Yeah, they started out as a penal colony, and they're becoming a penal colony again, tragically enough.
Yeah, and but you know, there's so many problems with this. I mean, first off, let's look at the whole concept of misinformation. Who's going to decide what's proper information, what's misinformation? Who gets to make that decision? And once they make that determination, what right do they have to censor people? You know, based upon what rule of law do they have the right to censor people and tell people that they can and can't say what they want to say? And how far does that go? And what are the consequences of spreading quote unquote misinformation? And these are all questions that we should definitely be asking ourselves. And I think that a lot of people are kind of stuck in this stupor and this malaise of not really paying any attention because we've been protected and living in a bubble for the past several hundred years, where we've been protected by the country that we're now trying to destroy. And we're lulled into a sense of complacency that we're safe. I don't think we're safe anymore.
I agree with you. And the way people always get around the First Amendment and freedom of speech is with this idea of danger and fear. And it's, well, if you were in a crowded room, would you yell fire? We've been hearing that for years. Would you yell fire in a crowded room? When I'm asked that, I say, well, it all depends on whether or not there's a fire. If there's really a fire in the crowded room, I'm going to shout fire.
Yeah, no, I mean, but, you know, here we are. I could talk about this all day. I mean, I'm sure you think about these things all day. We're living in a world where there's so much information being bandied about right now, and a lot of it's information that we're not allowed to see. Google won't let you see anything about ivermectin or hydroxychloroquine. Why not? Well, Google won't let you ask the question about if you've been exposed to COVID in the past, why do you need to have a vaccination, when we all know that the best possible vaccination that you can have is having been exposed to COVID and having natural
immunity, obviously.
So, you know, these are questions that legitimately deserve answers, and they deserve discussion in the public square. And yet they're labeled as dangerous misinformation. And I think we should all be frightened by that, because it is by nature the right thing to do for sentient, intelligent adults to look at the data that's available and to ask questions and say, why this, why not this, why, you know, what does the science really say? What does the data really say? You know, are there ulterior motives? Are there nefarious motives? And these are all things that we should be discussing, and the government and everybody should encourage us to discuss this so we can come up with really good answers. But when the government doesn't want you to discuss things and doesn't want you to really look at things, they just say don't ask questions, don't look into things, just do what we say because we know best, we're the government. I think that's a time when we should all be a little bit nervous. I mean, more than just a little bit nervous. It is very frightening.
Well, I agree with you. I'm sure my audience would agree that we're at least a little less nervous, knowing that you're standing on the wall for us. Bill Wells, what an honor to have you on my program. Let's do this again really soon.
Yeah, and I just, you know, encourage people, if they're worried about this situation, don't sit back. Show up at any board supervisor meeting. Write letters. Write emails. Make phone calls to Tara Lawson-Reamer. Make phone calls to Nathan Fletcher. These people are not immune to criticism. They don't like to be criticized. And if they get letter after letter and phone call after phone call, it will really help the cause.
Okay, either that or some other kind of way of making us look more dangerous to shut us up. But Bill, not on this program. Thank you so much. Ladies and gentlemen, we will see you next week. This is Bob Siegel making the obvious obvious.
The Bob Siegel Show is brought to you in part by the Law Offices of Matthew Simone.